Welcome to my Bob Thurman podcast. I'm so grateful some good friends enabled me to present them to you. If you enjoy them and find them useful, please think of becoming a member of Tibet House US to help preserve Tibetan culture. Tibet House is the Dalai Lama's cultural center in America. All best wishes. Have a great day.
This is episode 84, titled Emptiness Means Relativity.
May, how many of you have been here before? Oh my goodness, you're all like once returners, or how many of you have been here several times before? Oh, really? Twice returners. Those are types of saints, you know, in Buddhism. There's twice return, although the less you return, the better, actually. That case, because that's having to do with dualistic Buddhism, which Medicine Buddha is not involved with, and neither am I, and neither is the Tibetan tradition. But the Theravada Buddhism is what we call dualistic Buddhism. And why do we call it that? Because it proposes that nirvana is somewhere else. This is not nirvana. This is samsara that we're in. You know, this is the life of suffering. And nirvana is someplace apart from this. So the idea is you attain nirvana, you leave. You leave town and don't come back. For example, in this painting, which, you know, if you didn't look at it before the class, you can go and look at it later, it's a ink drawing, Japanese, I would say, of the Buddha attaining parinirvana. You know, which means, it's usually translated as final nirvana. But although pari doesn't really mean final, pari means total or thorough nirvana. And so this, you know, less respectful scholars talk at the time of Buddha's death. And then the saints around, if you look there, they're all in mourning, they're lamenting. They're so sad that he's leaving, you see, because final... And the way the Theravada dualistic Buddhists translated is final nirvana, they say. And like, you know, when you, because what they think is that when you meditate really hard, you don't study, and you become a monk or a nun, and then you attain nirvana in your life, but then you're still wandering around, your body's still there, you know. So it's not a really complete nirvana. Your body's still carrying suffering around, and you're dealing with difficulties in the world. And then when you leave the body, then you stay in this state of that is outside the world, which they have a meditative experience of such a state. Do you follow me? Mm-hmm. So then that's, they think that's the ultimate state. And many people think that, like, you all heard about voidness or emptiness as ultimate reality. You know, so you people think, I'll go into the void, but I'll be, it's a happy void, so I'll be a cool void. At least there's no misery in it, you know. But actually, pari means, I'm always thinking the doctor might be showing up. Oh, is that him? No. Thought he was the doctor. Hi. Hello. And you maybe take your shoes and outside. Well, in the other door, there's a place for shoes. No, not outside that door. They might get rained on. And there's a place out that door. And... So, non-dualistic Buddhism, on the other hand, believes that this here is nirvana. If we really knew what this here was, if we were really aware of what's real here, what the reality of this. Because emptiness doesn't mean like a null state apart from anything. Doesn't mean nothingness. And voidness doesn't, or emptiness doesn't mean that. What emptiness means is that everything is empty of any non-relational, isolated component, such as the self, for example. If we unenlightened people tend to think that there's something in me, like a soul, that's an absolute thing that never changes, and you know, it's like the real me. And then, you know, you have these things. You go away for the weekend to discover your true identity. And find out who you are, you know, this sort of thing. You know. So the idea is you're going to find that true identity. But from Buddha's analysis, that's a kind of psychotic idea and a psychotic attitude. Because if there was some, if what you really are is some absolute thing that doesn't relate to anything, what you really are is irrelevant to what you actually are, which is a relational entity, a totally interconnected mental and physical being, right? So what it is your mind, your body, your atoms, your subatomic this, whatever, your soul, spirit, everything about you is totally relational. Therefore, it's all empty of any non-relational component. You follow me? That's what emptiness means. So emptiness actually means relativity, total relativity. And apparently, now this, of course, is incredible to us, but apparently if we really knew that, that we were totally interrelated and there was no non-interrelated element about us or anybody else, this changes the quality of the difference of self and other, of self versus universe, and apparently you appreciate your interrelatedness with everything as a blissful state. This, of course, is very incredible to us normal people, because when we get too tangled up in too many things, we start freaking out. And we think being too interconnected could be like really boring. Like in Shantideva's great book, it says, well, if I was just totally interconnected with everybody else, then I'd be suffering all their sufferings on top of my own. That would be horrible. Why would I want to do that? And Shantideva says, oh, when you really realize that you're totally interconnected with everybody else in the way you are everybody else, as well as yourself, you identify with everybody else like a person in love identifies with the beloved. When you reach that condition, then you're like a wild goose in the spring who lands in the lotus pond. Is that Gela? No, not Gela. So, but that's, which is not really an answer, it's just like a nice analogy or metaphor. So this is the thing. So therefore, parinirvana, in my view, in the view of the Mahayana, Shakyamuni Buddha is taking total nirvana, which means by leaving his coarse body on purpose, because he can consciously not leave it if he doesn't want to, because he's reached a stage where he is not just sort of involuntarily proceeding like a robot mechanism. His body is his mind. To him, it's same. And everything else is his own mind too, in a way. And his mind is in everything else, so he's completely interconnected with the infinite universe, all other beings, and so he identifies with them all. He's in love with every other being, the Buddha is. That is to say, wants them all to be happy. So total nirvana is where he's sort of emphasizing his omnipresence rather than localization in a particular coarse body. Do you follow me? Mm-hmm. So therefore, that's why he's looking all joyful and gassed out. He's like, ah! And everybody else is freaking out because they're thinking he's just that person in that coarse body, you see. Because they think there's this person in this group, even though they're saints, and they've had a state as if they were outside the world, they still are identifying with themselves as being an individuated body rather than being interfused with the whole universe, which is the enlightened state from non-dualistic point of view. Is that clear? You don't have to agree, just as long as that's clear. And I don't pretend to fully understand it myself. Only you have to be a Buddha to fully understand it. But I still a bit get the idea. So therefore, a Buddha is believed to have this extraordinary, almost divine power, but short of a creator power. So Buddha is never blamable for the messy universe. You can't blame Buddha for that. And even he says, you know, the gods like Buddha, like Brahma really likes Buddha. I don't know if you know that. Brahma, the creator, Shiva, he likes them too. Shiva gets a little uptight with Buddha because he's so macho, you know. Like there's a sutra called the Karandavyuha Sutra where Buddha is in a mood and he's predicting people's enlightenment. He's saying, oh yeah, you're going to get enlightened like four universes in the future in such and such a world called Lotus, Bud, whatever, you know, like forever. And you're going to get enlightened in another universe. And he's doing this, what they call Vyakarana. He's predicting different, you know, individual evolutionary beings when they're going to be full enlightened. So then Shiva and Uma are there. And then Shiva comes running up and says, oh, when am I going to be Buddha? And so Buddha says to Shiva, he says, ladies first. I'm going to tell Uma when she's going to be Buddha. So then he predicts Uma's Buddhahood first, you know, and Shiva's like, okay. Well, he's in love with Uma, so he doesn't really care, but, you know, he may have to take his turn, you know. So then, and then Buddha predicts Shiva, and Shiva has a great Buddhahood, and it's going to be great. But the gods like Buddha because he knows that they are not omnipotent. So therefore, they are not blamed for evil, you know, for harm, for damage, for suffering. They can't be blamed for it. And Brahma, particularly, who is thought of as the creator, there's a sutra where he says, Buddha, please, when you get enlightened, tell people that I have goodwill for them, I love them, I do my best to help them, but I am not omnipotent. And they have their own karma, and I have mine. And I can't control everything that happens to everybody. So don't blame me when your children die or when some awful thing happens, you know. He actually asked Buddha that. He does. It's very cute. And this is, you know, that shows you what a great civilization India was in that ancient time. Can you imagine going to Pat Robertson's church and reporting that you had a little chat with God? And God said that, you know, like to tell people that he's not to blame for, you know, whatever, and he's not mad with gay people and all kinds of things like that. And then not get, they throw stones at you, they shoot you. Although actually Neil Walsh did that, didn't he? Nice rabbi, Neil Donald Walsh. He talks about God all the time. God is always telling him stuff. Have you ever read any of his books?
Yeah.
They're fun, actually. He says, oh, God said to me this. And he's always talking to God. Conversations with God, they're called. And then conversations with God. One, two, God is very talkative. to Rabbi Dean Neil Donald Walsh. It's sort of shocking to see it, but it's great, I think. It's very like Buddhism. So we become more tolerant, that means. But anyway, okay, so there's tremendous... But Buddha has this very powerful, great power to shape things to benefit others. Like he's the ultimate pedagogue, the Buddha. You know, Shasta, they call, one of his names is Shasta, the most important name, which means teacher. And he's the ultimate teacher.